And welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on Inside the Ropes, because that makes sense. My name is Kenny McIntosh. I'm back here on the podcasts, which is good. I was back on the main feed on Monday with Conrad Thompson, where we talked about lots of stuff. I was with David over on Patreon, over to you yesterday, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. And now I'm here reunited in the warm bosom of Sondra. Hi, Sondra, how are you?
Hi, Kenny. I'm doing pretty well. It's funny that you say warm bosom because someone commented on my Instagram, one of the pictures that I posted. Holy fuck, you do have bigger boobs than The Undertaker. So apparently this is my legacy.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, that's something.
You do have bigger boobs than The Undertaker. I mean, In terms of compliments, it's got to be up
there. I mean,
there.
I'll take it, honestly. But it's good to be talking to you again. It's been so long. I mean, technically we did talk when we did NXT yesterday, but still, like, there was a point, and I didn't even tell you this, like, there was a point during your, you know, hiatus from podcasting for understandable reasons where I was like, I haven't talked to Kenny in like 2 weeks. This is weird. I have never gone this long without talking to you since we, like, started podcasting. I mean, not that I wasn't, like, texting you and stuff, but it was just strange.
I didn't talk to anybody. Really?
No.
I just didn't want, because the thing is, everybody who would talk would want to talk to me would want to talk about it, and I was just so sick of talking about it.
Mm-hmm. There was one point where I was tempted to call you and talk about Drag Race.
I mean, I'm always open to those conversations. I was saying, for people who are not on Patreon, I was saying to David, which one of the interesting things about the whole Undertaker situation, I might say debacle internally, but situation, is wrestling, WWE, and watching old wrestling or new wrestling is usually my safe space if I'm feeling down or whatever. And because of the Undertaker thing, like, I just didn't want to watch wrestling. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to be around it. So I didn't really have a safe space to go and watch something else or do something else. And then Big Steve Gunn had got me into RuPaul's Drag Race, and over the period of like maybe about 5-6 weeks where it was all going on, because like there was about 4 or 5 times where it was like, it's going to happen, it's not going to happen, it's going to happen, it's not going to happen, and RuPaul's Drag Race was the thing that got me through it. So it kind of became my place where I could go, and like RuPaul's very like, you know, talks about your inner demons, and he calls it your saboteur, and like, he would always talk about people, you know, people getting up from adversity and all that. And I was like, yeah, RuPaul, when Undertaker doesn't go on that plane, I'm going to come back from this adversity. I don't know how, but I'm going to.
But you're going to do it. But he got on the plane.
He got on the plane. He got on a couple of planes, actually, didn't he? He got on one plane to go meet Vince to sort it out. That's not weird in any way, shape or form. And then he got on a plane, came to the UK. Stand-up guy. A lot of people wouldn't have done it. And yeah. So he came. He signed. He didn't talk. And Mick Foley, absolute lad, he came over and saved the day. So that was great.
To hear that, like, he has the reputation of being one of the nicest guys in wrestling. And it's awesome to hear that he is just one of the nicest guys in wrestling.
Yeah, he really is. Is there anything that you want to ask me about the Undertaker tour, or anything that you think I should talk about it before we move on to all non-Undertaker tour related things?
I'm trying to think of anything I don't know. I really haven't even talked to you about the tour that much. Like, how did meet and greets go with the Undertaker as compared to other tours that I've been on, like, in terms of getting people through? Because I've seen some of the stuff online that, like, he had handlers that were very abrasive, would be a term, potentially, and that it was kind of hard to get access and stuff. Like, how did everything go smoothly with all of that? Was it just kind of standard business that we normally have?
I hated it. It wasn't an Inside the Ropes meet and greet. Our team weren't allowed to work with The Undertaker, which, you know, people who are hired and paid to do these tours and have done them. And it's like, it's funny because somebody who was representing Undertaker said, you know, why do you not look happy? And I was like, because our team aren't allowed to do their jobs. You know, it's almost like we're being made to feel, whether it's intended or not, we're being made to feel that we are not able to be around them in case we do something. You know, we might just mark out at any moment.
Because it's not like we've never had names before.
And actually, one of the funny conversations I had with someone says, you know, somebody said, well, you know, this is how it is when you work with the big names. And I was like, I think it is, though. I've worked with big names before. Goldberg is a big name, and he was the easiest guy in the world to work with. Gentleman.
He was lovely.
Yeah, all of our team worked with him. So I didn't feel like the meet and greet was an Inside the Ropes meet and greet. I felt like it was more like a standard convention meet and greet, not to take away from people who run conventions. They are... lots of people enjoy them. They're not for me. But yes, I didn't really enjoy the meet and greets because of that. I felt like, I don't feel like there was any atmosphere there. I felt like the people who represented him, who felt that they really needed to be across everything, meant that that kind of took away some of the fun that I like to try and have when we're at these meet and greets and stuff. And, you know, Undertaker was great. He was a lovely guy and very nice, but it was just everybody kind of around him. It was like, there was an atmosphere, there was a tenseness, there was an awkwardness about it, which I felt even worse about, because I knew people were paying so much money. Mm-hmm. But then the only thing I could really do, my whole thing was I had to get him there. So I got him there, which was the best I could do. So the only thing I could really do after that was make sure the Mick Foley meet and greet went. But it was funny, you know, because looking at the two meet and greets that were going on simultaneously, you had the people who were going to meet The Undertaker who were, you know, just... I mean, they're already in awe of the situation, and, you know, they're being looked at as if, like, what are you doing? What are you bringing out your bag? And da-da-da. And it's all just very kind of weird. And then you go over to the Mick Foley meet and greet, and it's just this... It felt like, oh, there's Inside the Ropes over there. There's one of our things that's nice and fun and relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was kind of how I found it. So,
how did you shuffle the meet and greets, like, happening simultaneously? I'm just thinking logistically, like, did people meet The Undertaker and then go meet Mick Foley?
Well, to also make things even more interesting is... So the way that we usually run our meet and greets is we usually have somebody go up to the talent, and the talent will do a signing and a photo at the same time. I was explicitly told that is not allowed to happen, because they did not want that to be... They did not want Undertaker to be in a position where he was going to be doing both at the same time. For whatever reason. Now, this was probably never even broached to him, so it probably was never something that even got to him. But that meant that our entire strategy that we had was basically fucked. So one of the guys who was running the convention in Liverpool the day before, he was there in the Manchester venue, so he saw that I was just like... I don't really want to go into why, but I got so close on the Monday at Manchester. I don't even know if I told you this. I was in tears at the meet and greet.
I talked to you just a little bit afterward, but you didn't go into detail, and I wasn't going to pry.
Visibly crying in front of fans, in front of staff, in front of everybody. And it was because I spoke to somebody in wrestling who I'd asked their advice. And they gave me some really good advice, but they said, look, you're going to go through a lot of hurdles to get this done, but once you get it done, you know, it'll be fine. And it felt like when we got there that it was just like there was problems created that didn't need to be created, there was issues that didn't need to be. And to me, I was like, look, I'm paying a lot of money for these to happen, so I feel like I should have some say over how they run. That was not shared. So anyway, I ended up just basically having a bit of a breakdown. Because, you know, 5 minutes before the meet and greet's about to open, I'm told that the way we run the meet and greet's not the way we're allowed to run it. So I'm like, well, I don't know what to do now, because, you know, what do you do?
Well, because that's like, I mean, our team has kind of a well-oiled system, right? Like, they know what they're doing. And when I go over there, I'm always kind of just like on the outside of it a little, because like you guys do more of them, obviously. But that does kind of upset the whole atmosphere of an Inside the Ropes meet and greet.
Yeah, exactly. So, basically, I had a bit of a breakdown in Manchester, and I was about to walk out and just go, because I just didn't want to do it. I was like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. And then I ended up just about getting it together, and then was able to kind of get through the rest of the week. And then we brought the guy who did the convention around to London, Glasgow, so that we brought him around so that we could kind of have the meet and greet run the way that they wanted it to. And that was kind of, that was how it went. So basically we kind of took care of the Mick Foley meet and greet and had people, you know, sorting the queue for the Undertaker one, but the Undertaker one, you know, we just weren't really allowed anywhere near it because, you know, what do we know? We haven't done 50 of these shows so far.
Right. Mm-hmm. And amazingly, you were able to run the Mick Foley one smoothly then.
Oh yeah, the Mick Foley one's a piece of piss. Dead easy. The Mick Foley one was just the easiest thing in the world. There was no problems with that one.
That's good. At least there was one of them that worked out, I suppose. It was because Mick Foley did that one for free, right?
Yeah, he did that one for free.
That's awesome. Like, so, I mean, it's just when you say that you did everything that you could to make this tour happen and run, like, I don't think people realize just how much you had to, like, deal with, I guess, like, on a day-to-day basis, like, because things just kept changing and changing and changing. Even when we were in New York, stuff was still, like, changing and changing and changing.
Yeah, it was constantly changing, constantly moving, but we got through it in the end, is the end of the story. So, but yeah, I'm hoping in the future I'll maybe have fonder memories of it, but I do not right now.
Well, you're still so close to it, and you're still dealing with kind of some aftermath stuff, so it's hard to. I mean, I think that you'll probably be able to look back on it as an accomplishment in like a year or two.
But yeah, maybe. Well, I think if you were to tell me I could press a button and not have done it, I wouldn't press the button only because I know so many people got to meet him, and that mm-hmm. was really important. So yeah, that's what I would kind of say to that. Should we just get into the questions? We've got tons of questions from listeners.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so listener questions. Mike Grierson, with making up the wild card rule on Raw, is Vince McMahon actually taking the piss out of himself on screen for all the late Raw rewrites we hear about, or is he just desperate? So the wild card rule being that now four Raw roster members can be on SmackDown, four SmackDown members can be on Raw any one time. So that, yeah, what do you make of the wild card rule?
The wildcard rule is terrible. It's absolutely terrible. And it makes no sense because, like, I understand that apparently there are reports coming out from Dave Meltzer that the networks, USA and NBC, have not been happy with ratings. Shocking. They're the lowest they've ever been, right? And so they want big stars across both brands. Vince McMahon still believes in the brand split. This is kind of his compromise. I don't blame Vince McMahon for this because I am someone who wants the brand split to stay intact. But the wildcard rule, just the way it was set up and the way it was executed this week, doesn't make a lot of sense, and it happening so soon after the superstar shakeup, it really loses any kind of impact. So I can see what the company's trying to do. They're like, oh, people might tune in because what SmackDown star is going to be on Raw this week, because that's an exciting thing and you kind of want to find out, right? This seems like an example of them throwing shit at the wall in desperation, and sometimes when they do that, good things happen. This unfortunately seems like one of those situations where good things are not happening because you just get superstars coming over. Like on Raw, you had Kofi Kingston, the WWE champion, who was supposed to be on SmackDown, be confronted by Daniel Bryan, who was supposed to be on SmackDown, and you have a WWE championship match in the main event of Monday Night Raw, which is supposed to be represented by the Universal Championship. And it would be one thing if the Universal Champion was still some guy who only showed up every 4 months, but Seth Rollins is the current Universal Champion and he's on the show getting pinned in the middle of the ring. So none of this really makes sense. And because it's so soon after the superstar shakeup too, when The Miz showed up on SmackDown, for instance, it didn't click to me right away, oh, he's not supposed to be here, because I'm so used to seeing The Miz on SmackDown for the past year or so, right? When Roman Reigns shows up on Raw, right, like I'm used to seeing Roman Reigns on Raw, so it doesn't seem like he feels out of place or anything like that. I don't think the brands themselves are established enough and solidified enough for there to be a wild card rule in effect where it's like, oh, this is shocking. That person's where they're not supposed to be. So I think it just loses any kind of impact that they're trying to go for. And it really muddies storylines too. Like on SmackDown, for instance, with Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan being awarded the tag team titles, which, oh boy, do I have things to say about the tag team division. I'm sure we have questions about it later, but Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan being awarded the tag team titles and then the Usos showing up from Raw to confront them for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Like, that's cool. And, you know, seeing the Usos versus Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan is cool, but no one thinks the Usos are going to win that match because they're not on this show and they're not going to get the SmackDown Tag Team Championships because then they would just be back on SmackDown. So it's all just, it just feels like all of the waters are kind of muddied and nothing is that interesting. Mr. Sandra said it would be one thing if the chaos provided some sort of interest, but it doesn't. It's just chaos that is also boring and it's kind of the worst of all worlds. So no, I'm not a big fan of the wild card situation, but I think Vince McMahon is in a tough position if he wants to maintain some sort of brand integrity with, you know, having Raw be separate from SmackDown and has pressure from networks to have stars on both shows. I understand trying to compromise. I just don't think this is it. I don't know. Like, I'm pretty sour on it. What did you think?
I think the tough spot that they're in is that they, you know, I think now a lot of the audience, and I'm kind of included in it, so a lot of the audience don't believe them anymore. You know, they came out in December and the reaction to the ratings was, we're going to change things, and nothing changed. And then, you know, NXT call-ups don't tend to do much for the most part. There are exceptions, obviously. Last year, Braun Strowman's Money in the Bank contract, he lost it in a no contest.
In a Hell in a Cell. Don't forget, it was a no contest and a Hell in a Cell. Oh, I'm still angry.
So, like, stuff like that is why. And then, like, so this year, Money in the Bank's coming up, and I don't think people are excited about it, because I don't think that people are excited about it. Money in the Bank is one of those things where it should be like a writer's dream, the amount of interesting scenarios you could do, and they never do it, you know, they never really seem to do that. So I think that what they're finding is that they're, maybe the last 4 or 5 years of kind of stagnant storytelling that they've had, you know, they have had glimmers of good stuff and all that, but a lot of that's catching up with them. The women's division, where, you know, the women's division, part of the greatness of it was Ronda Rousey, Charlotte and Becky, Asuka. Now Asuka's in a kind of meaningless tag team. Becky and Charlotte have fought so many times that nobody wants to see it anymore, and Ronda's gone. So your women's division has now kind of lost every piece of, like, specialness that it had. So there's a lot of stuff that felt like it was there before that doesn't feel it's there now, and I think that's the big problem. So I guess the wild card rule is kind of his attempt to shake things up, but...
But we just shook things up. Like, the dust hasn't settled from the shake-up, and so...
That was the first sign for me of worry, was I watched the Superstar shake-up, and I was like... Because I thought the Superstar shake-up was going to ignite me again a little bit, and it didn't. And I was like, oh, it's not really...
Well, it's something Finn and I talked about. It seemed like there were fewer contenders for all of the titles after the Superstar Shakeup instead of more. Like, because in past years, even if I haven't loved the way the draft went, you know, when I was covering SmackDown exclusively, and even, you know, 2 years ago when I was just not very happy about the roster that SmackDown was given, even then, it seemed like it had some intrigue and, you know, you could see they were kind of shuffling around and creating more contenders for certain titles. And at least one of the brands felt like it had some new and interesting storyline possibilities. I mean, I can try and find stuff. Like, Asuka and Ember Moon are currently on the same brand. That's something that in future could be interesting. But with the positions of those women on the show right now, I can't see that that's like a goal of theirs. It doesn't seem like they're looking to reignite Asuka and Ember Moon's feud in any kind of way. And it just kind of seems like everyone's just kind of stuck in purgatory, treading water. Like, we're all here and doing stuff. And then with people moving between brands. And I think one of the other issues I had with it was the Superstar shakeup happened. And then the next week it was still happening. Right? Like, there was, like, detritus from the shakeup because, like, Samoa Joe wasn't in the initial Superstar shakeup. So then he shows up on Raw the next week and is like, hey, I do what I want. Okay, fine. You're still shaking things up. Like, the club showed up on SmackDown? Raw? What when are they? Genuine question. I think they showed up on Raw, like, 3 weeks later. And we're like, we're on this show now. We just weren't seen on camera or in graphics before. They haven't announced anything about Nikki Cross has still not been shaken up to anywhere. She's just backstage laughing at stuff and looking for her evil twin on YouTube, which is brilliant, by the way. I love her YouTube channel. But yeah, like it all just kind of feels like with the shakeup, you don't trust that anyone's really on those brands anyway. And then with the wildcard rule, anyone can just kind of go where they want. So none of it matters. And why are we even watching this? And what even is the point?
So that's how we feel about the wildcard rule. Connor Hughes, though, says, non-wrestling related, my girlfriend is obsessed with RuPaul's Drag Race. And since I heard you talking about it, I thought I'd give it a shot. And it's completely mental in the best way. So my question is, who's your favorite? Now, he's watched all the seasons. Sandra's watched some. I mean, the best way to describe it, I think, for people who haven't watched it, is it's basically wrestling but drag. They do challenges. RuPaul is like the original drag queen who made it big. And it's like a reality show. And it's like Tough Enough for America's Next Top Model or American Idol or whatever with drag queens. And it's bitchy. And every week, the two who do the worst end up having to lip sync for their life. And whoever wins stays, whoever loses goes. But of the ones you've seen so far, Sandra, who are your favorites? Some of your favorites.
Oh man, I'm trying to think now. I really, really like Evie Oddly this season. And I'm not caught up. I haven't seen the past two episodes, so I don't know if she's still there. But I am a big fan of Evie Oddly. I think she's great. I mean, Vanjie's just a character. She's an absolute character. I love her. I didn't think I would. I thought when Vanjie came back for season, what are we on, 11 now?
11, yeah.
11, yeah. Like, when Vanjie came back after, like, I mean, I guess, spoilers, but she gets eliminated in the first episode of a previous season. And when she came back, I expected to, like, hate her, because I thought she was just going to be, like, super, super bitchy, and because she seems so over the top, right? Little did I know that fucking Silky Ganache was going to be in my life, and I just want to throw her into the sun. But Vanjie actually ended up being kind of like a sweet person and, like, I don't know, enjoyable to me. I'm trying to think who some of my favorites have been in the past. Of course, I'm blanking now because I didn't really have Drag Race on my mind. But yeah, Evie's one of my faves. Brooklyn Heights has been great. Like, I didn't expect to like her as much as I do.
Okay.
I know. Who are some of your favorites? I'm trying to think.
So there are many. So I tend to like the kind of the black drag queens who are like sassy and like they have like a swag to them. I don't tend to like a lot of the younger, hipper queens that they have. Like, they're just not really my thing. But some of my favorites, Bianca Del Rio from season 6 is one of the best. She said to one of the drag queens who was younger, she was like, she said, Adore Delano, I know what you got in your SATs, ketchup. So she's always got like witty, fast remarks. Peppermint, who was on season 9, who was the first ever trans woman to be a drag queen on the show. Who else do I love? Monet Exchange, who was on season 10, who...
Oh, she was great, yeah.
Who did Nicki Minaj's Pound the Alarm and did a fake death drop. There's a very large black drag queen called Latrice Royale, who I really like because she's kind of terrible, but she's great in how terrible she is. I just live for the lip syncs at the end. Like, I'm all about them. So yeah, and I hate Trinity Taylor, aka Trinity the Tuck. Despise her. Just would set her on fire.
Okay, if you had to choose between Trinity Taylor and Silky Ganache,
I hate Trinity more.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow.
At least Silky, like, I give Silky credit for being a big person who can, like, pull off so many unique looks.
I just think she's so bitchy backstage and, like, so incendiary for no particular reason. And then I hate that she's so good at drag. Like, it bothers me how good she is at it. I'm like, I want you to be eliminated because... like, I don't like you. And she's starting shit with people and, like, going after Evie and stuff. And I'm not a fan.
There you go. That is a hard no from from you. So, yeah, I mean, if you've never watched it, it's all on Netflix. All 11 seasons are on there. They also do a few seasons of...
They're not on US Netflix.
Are they not?
No.
They're on UK Netflix.
That would be lovely, but no. It's actually really hard to find some of the episodes to watch. Like, I've had to skip certain episodes.
Can you get, like, a blocker and just get the UK Netflix?
I might have to, yeah.
Okay, so let's move on from that. Adric Mason, will Kenny, will Hulk ever get a macho brother to play with? One day Hulk is going to get Randy to form the Megapause. It is going to happen one day. We're probably about 18 months away from it, but it's going to happen. Jack Parry, who would you have as Bray's first feud? You want to have someone who you can have good matches with and keep it captivating character-wise, also put him over. So who would you like to see Bray's first feud with? Feud be with?
I mean, okay, so the obvious choice for me would be Aleister Black based on storyline. Like, because Aleister Black is cutting these, you know, spooky, over-explainy promos in dark rooms right now. And he's talking about, like, forgiveness and his absolution, which he will get when he beats people, which I guess is kind of a callback to that Johnny Gargano match that he said where he was like, I absolve you of your sins, kicks him, and then wins, right? But I don't know that Aleister Black debuting and then losing to Bray Wyatt is going to be great. Like, I don't want Aleister Black to turn into the next tragedy story like Bray Wyatt was for so many years. So that said, I don't know who I would make his first feud be with. I would want it to be someone who's good. I guess I don't really have anyone in mind. I'm trying to think who's even... And it depends if Bray's on Raw or SmackDown, although I guess maybe it doesn't matter if Bray's on Raw or SmackDown because none of this matters anymore. I think we're so far from Bray Wyatt getting to a wrestling feud that that's not exactly where my brain is quite yet, because I think the Firefly Funhouse can go on for at least another few weeks before wrestlers, like, I have more of a way of introducing someone into a feud than I have a particular person in mind, because I would love for someone to be either, like, a guest on the Firefly Funhouse or, you know, maybe try and have an intervention with Bray about the Firefly Funhouse, because it's obviously, it's so dark. Like, the Firefly Funhouse is so dark and brilliant and beautiful, and I think it would be interesting to have another wrestler come and maybe be a part of it, and that's kind of how you start a feud. I don't know if he's going to, like, recruit wrestlers to his side or if that's going to, like, he's going to have to teach someone a lesson or something like that. Maybe it should be someone a little bit lower card just so that he can get a strong win, because I want Bray Wyatt to succeed with this. I want it so badly. I want him to actually win a thing and be Bray Wyatt again, because he feels like Bray Wyatt again in a different form, obviously. But there are so many callbacks to old Bray Wyatt. And if he can actually, like, win, then I know I'm going to pop for it. Cause, like, when he won the WWE Championship, I cried because I just can't quit him because he's my favorite. So is there anyone in mind that sticks out to you? Because I'm really struggling to think of someone. Elias Samson? Could it be Elias Samson?
See, I feel like by going that route of kind of going, you know, who's he going to feud with? I think we're killing him off. Because I think that what would make this character successful is I don't think he should ever be in the ring having a 20-minute wrestling match. I don't want to see it. I don't have any interest in it. He's done that before and he's not very good at it. Mm-hmm. So for me, what I would like to see is take advantage of the fact that the company has a shit ton of money and put your money into doing something different. I would like to see him come out during the B-Team's matches and sort of, like, get to Bo Dallas a little bit just by, you know, being the friendly, happy guy, and you maybe create a story with them, but it doesn't involve Bray wrestling. It can just be stories that you tell throughout the show, because...
So he could almost be more of a manager role than a wrestler.
Yeah, like, look at, you know,
brilliant.
We watch Retro Raw every week, and the last 3 months, two of the characters who've had a huge role have been The Undertaker and Vince McMahon, right? And neither of them really have wrestled. Undertaker's wrestled a bit, but not really, right? And that's been the big story. So for me, I just don't think that Bray really needs to wrestle that often. And yeah, I'd rather see him be, like, Sting didn't wrestle for a year in WCW and he became the most over guy there. Why not just let Bray Wyatt get over by being this weird character instead of everybody insisting that he gets put into an arena with 20,000 people where it instantly loses its luster, which it would, no matter who you put him with. Mm-hmm. That would be my suggestion.
Well, and I think... No, and I agree with you. I really like that idea. And I think eventually, like, he could have a wrestling match with somebody if a story progressed or if a story came around. I mean, it kind of reminds me of when the Fashion Files were happening, right? And then eventually the Fashion Files did lead to that Usos Fashion Police match, which was brilliant and involved, you know, dressing up, and it was a perfect comedy match and everything. But the Fashion Police were super, super over with Fashion Files without wrestling a whole bunch. So I would kind of like to see it go more that route. And I would like to have it be given a little bit more of a chance to grow and breathe. And I know a lot of people are probably like, they're just going to kill it when he gets to the ring and all that kind of stuff. And it's probably true. But I'm trying to look at Firefly Funhouse the way I look at NXT right now, where I'm really, really enjoying it. And I just can't wait for next week's installment. And
But
I'm trying not to think too future-wise.
I don't think I think if they put him in the ring, it dies instantly, no matter what you do with it. This is not a cat like this is not a character who should be in the normal world. So like to me that's how I feel about it. So I would, yeah, I just think let him be mental and do different stuff and have him turn up and maybe he cracks, and sometimes he'll do a move to somebody when he cracks, when that old Bray Wyatt comes into his brain or something.
Yeah. And then he needs to be forgiven.
Yeah, exactly. But that should be the extent of what it is, I think.
Because that's why I think, like, Aleister Black and Bray Wyatt, I do want to see them interact at some point. Even if it's not a wrestling match, I think it would be fascinating because Bray Wyatt's talking about forgiveness on Firefly Funhouse, right? Like, that's his whole thing. That was his whole thing this week was, you know, forgiving Mercy the Buzzard for eating Rambling Rabbit, RIP Rambling Rabbit. I was legit sad about Rambling Rabbit this week, Kenny. But Bray Wyatt, you know, talking all of the bad things that he's done, and he needs to be forgiven, and you need to forgive each other. And you can tell it's all this facade because he has a dark, dark soul between him, like underneath this like shiny veneer of Firefly Funhouse and Laugh Track and whatnot. I mean, I don't know. I love it. I love the whole thing. I think it has so much potential to be fascinating. And I guess I don't really even want to fantasy book it because I'm scared that it would kill it if it goes too far.
Okay, more questions. Sam Carter wants to know thoughts on the rules of the casino battle royale and the stipulation of a future title shot for the winner. So yeah, basically there is going to be a battle royal on the pre-show for Double or Nothing called the Casino Battle Royale. Cody Rhodes has said on the new Road to Double or Nothing that the winner is going to get the first title shot at the new AEW World Champion. And the rules of the match are it'll be a 21 wrestler over the top battle royale. Starts with 5 men. Every 3 minutes, a new wave of 5 men enter. Lucky 21 will enter last, and the battle royale entry numbers are picked at a later date. What do you think of the concept?
I think it sounds great. It's the first I'm hearing about it. I've been kind of away from wrestling news, but it sounds really cool. Is this taking the place of the Over the Budget Battle Royal then?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Because I think a lot of the people announced for it are really, really great. So that sounds awesome. And I like the fact that it has a stake to it too. Like getting a chance at the winner of either Pac versus Adam Page. Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I think it's great.
Yeah, I would concur. It's a fresh concept. It could be a cluster, but I like they're trying something different. So,
And sometimes clusters can be fun.
exactly. Randy Hayden wants to know, how much potential do you see in the Velveteen Dream? I personally think he could be WWE champion within 5 years. How do you think Vince would handle a character like that in the main roster? Well, they don't have a great track record with NXT talent. Do you think Dream would be able to overcome the shortcomings of the main roster writing and establish himself as a star?
I see all the potential in the world in Velveteen Dream. Whether he'll succeed on the main roster, I have no idea. I don't think the future's great. I think that he could easily be a guy that Vince just doesn't get when he gets called up, and he could, you know, just kind of be stuck in a tag team or in mid-card matches with people where they just trade wins and losses. I mean, that's we've seen talents come up who seem can't miss. Like, I mean, Ricochet right now is incredibly dull and boring on the main roster. He should not be dull and boring, but he is because he's not doing anything interesting. So Velveteen Dream could either go the way of, I don't know, like he could be a super important force if he's brought up and given care and given the treatment of a star, or he could just be another guy and then be shuffled off backstage. Like, honestly, I could see it going either way. I could see him being another like Lars Sullivan or Sandy or something like that, where, you know, he's on the show for a minute and he has a really cool entrance and he makes a really big impact one time, and then he's just kind of doing nothing. And I know that's kind of a grim outlook, but I don't think it has anything to do with the talent and the stars and the potential and what they bring to the table. I think it's just, it's not an ecosystem where people are able to succeed. So unless people get really, really behind him and make him a star the way they did Daniel Bryan or Becky Lynch or someone like that, I don't know. Like, it could go either way, depending on, you know, the mood of the company and the mood of Vince McMahon.
I think right now is going to be, I think that for Velveteen Dream, he's in a really good position, because when he eventually comes up, well, I say this unless they freak out and bring him up like tomorrow, but like when he comes up, AEW is probably going to be a thing. So there's probably going to be a little bit more care in bringing him up, because by that point, I feel like things will have changed and they will be like, oh God, what do we do? I mean, that's what I think is going to happen. I could be completely wrong, though.
I hope so. Like, I mean, I hope for the best for him, because I think he's fantastic. And I think he's one of the best characters they have in NXT right now and could really bring some much needed storytelling to the main roster. But I just, right now, given how Raw and SmackDown have played out the past few weeks, I'm just not that optimistic about NXT call-ups in general.
Oh, yeah, especially if he came up right now. I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah. It's a clusterfuck. and not the fun kind.
Not the fun kind. Omar Sanchez wants to know, hi Kenny, assume you've likely covered this and over to you, but has the Undertaker situation that occurred with you and the company in Connecticut impacted the way you view their product or will view them in the future? I personally wouldn't blame you if it did, but I'm curious. No, it's not really. I mean, I had a nice interaction with WWE. I have nothing bad to say about them. We worked together on it. They were part of the reason that it ended up happening, because we ended up being able to work together on it. So I don't have anything bad to say about them. And the Undertaker situation doesn't impact me enjoying or not enjoying the product. Like the reason I'm kind of disenfranchised right now with watching it is nothing to do with the Undertaker tour. It's just more to do with, like,
the TV is bad.
The TV is not great. That's more why. But it's a fair question, and if the result had been different, maybe I would have had a different answer to that question. Craig McKeegan's asking about the wild card as well. God, let's just not talk about it anymore, because it's depressing. Will Inside the Ropes look at covering NXT UK and some of the bigger UK indies such as Progress? I don't think so, because I don't really think the market's there for it. I think that if you've got, like, if we have thousands of listeners to every podcast and then hundreds on Patreon to every podcast, I just don't know if enough people would be, put it this way, if there was enough people clamoring for it, we would do it, and nobody really ever asks us about it. So, but I will say, I know that Di Owen and a few of the other listeners do it, and Michael Farrow do the developmental podcast, I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, they cover NXT UK on that.
So they cover the NXT UK over there, so check them out. But yeah, I can't imagine that we would have more time to do it. But if a really good match was on, I'm open to watching it and talking about it on the show. But that's kind of how I feel about it. How do you feel, Sandra?
That's kind of how I feel about it too. I mean, I think maybe we could cover like takeovers, like NXT UK, because we did NXT Takeover UK before and that was really fun. But I just, given how much we already watch and how much content we already put out, I just don't know that we want to do more. And sometimes it's kind of nice to be able to NXT UK, you know, every few weeks when I get a chance to check it out. It's nice to just have a wrestling thing that I don't have to cover for work. So, like, saving some of the wrestling things that I don't have to cover. I feel kind of the same way about 205 Live. I like bringing up stuff about 205 Live on Inside the Ropes, but I don't want to, like, have a specific 205 Live podcast, because then it just becomes another job. So, yeah, I mean, like, if there were tons and tons of people who were like, we need this cover, then I'd be open to it. But I think maybe just covering the takeovers and mentioning the highlights and bigger spots is kind of the way to go for now.
Yeah, I would concur. Then we have Courtney Johnson. What the fuck is wrong with WWE? I've watched since I was 5 and now 30, and it's just crap. I've even started watching Impact for some half decent storytelling. I mean, I don't. Like, I think that the way they've booked over the last few years has caught up with them. That's what seems to have happened. And
I almost feel like just being like, haha, I was right, bitches, like, about not creating new stars and focusing so much on the past, and now the past people can't all come back all the time to save you, and you didn't build stars, and you made everybody feel like nothing, and now you're stuck. And so they need to unstick themselves, but it's tough, because, like, in this sort of, you know, like, in the mire of everything right now, they're making everyone feel less special instead of more, right? Like, they need to just pick some people. And unfortunately, sometimes they pick the person that you don't want to see, right? Like they picked Roman Reigns, and that's, you know, something the company tried to do. They tried to be like, no, he is the star. He is the guy. Unfortunately, a lot of the crowd did not agree with that. And it wasn't an organic give and take. And, you know, what happened happened. But even, you know, even Becky Lynch was a big star, big, 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 big star a few months ago. And I think she still is. I think that when she comes out on a program, she still feels like a big star. But I think a lot of the buzz and the excitement behind Becky Lynch has waned a little bit. And that sometimes, you know, fans' attention spans are short. But I don't know, like they need to actually have more of a hierarchy probably with some of their roster members. And I'm guilty of sometimes my favorite people being lesser on the card than I want them to be. And I'll complain about that because I'm a fan on the internet too. But I don't know. Like they need to actually start establishing some big megastars and have them feel important.
But that, you know, it's because Courtney brought up Impact there, and I think part of the reason that, you know, I think Duncan Boyd had said the other day that Impact's really good, and I'm sure it is. But like, there's no stars on the show. Like there's like I don't really ever hear anybody talk about it. And like, I like the type of wrestling fan I am. I know Sandra's very different to me. I want to watch stuff that feels really important and can't miss, and I don't feel like that's what that is at the moment. But we have Asada Bass who has a question. With AEW's Double or Nothing being broadcast on ITV box office in the UK, and potentially with weekly TV on the ITV airwaves, what's going to happen to World of Sport? Do they carry on as they are? Do we see WWE start being loaded to AEW? All I will say is, World of Sport is not dead, and I don't think it really has anything to do with this. But, I mean, AEW being an ITV box office, draw your own conclusions. I'm sure it's not the only conversation they've had.
Right. I really have nothing to add. I don't live there. Sorry. I don't get ITV, so...
Okay, so we had some Twitter questions that we should finish off with that I had taken down. Where are we? Okay, Twitter questions. Ben from Texas, tag team division, and go.
Oh, it's bad. It's real bad, isn't it? When the Superstar Shakeup was about to happen, I remember saying that they needed to balance out the tag team divisions because Raw's tag team division was like, I mean, the Revival are awesome and they were there and they should be doing so much more than getting Usi hot on their butts and crotches and rolling around in the ring. And what even are you doing? I don't understand. They're the best tag team and they're just making them comedy fodder. Like, ha ha ha, you shave your back. Ha ha ha, we put shit in your pants and now you are in pain. And the Usos are above this shit too, right? Like they should be. The Usos are so much better as a team than Vince McMahon comedy shenanigans. My head is in my hands because the Raw tag team division after the Superstar Shakeup is great. Like you have the Usos there, you have the Revival there, you have, I don't know if when Sheamus comes back from injury, he's going to be on Raw or SmackDown. We don't know. Antonio Cesaro seems to be kind of a singles performer right now, but you have, I think, the Club are on Raw to stand in the background of these segments and laugh awkwardly, apparently. But Raw seems to have a bunch of tag teams, and SmackDown does not. Like, SmackDown has the New Day with Biggie Langston out, obviously. And they have the B-Team on SmackDown, which I love the B-Team. And I think the B-Team as Shane McMahon's lackeys are interesting. Like, it made me actually legitimately sad to see them beat up The Miz because I got all these Miztrash memories and went, aw. But as far as, I mean, when the Hardy Boys vacated the SmackDown Tag Team Championships, I thought, who's going to be the champions? Like, I couldn't even think of teams that would be worthy. Heavy Machinery are over on SmackDown, but I don't know that they have really come across as tag team champion material at this point. And I mean, Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan, I didn't even realize were a team, and now they are the champions just because Shane McMahon told them that they are the champions. And I kind of hate that. Like, I'm with the Usos who say, like, no, you should have to fight for these tag team championships. There should be a reason that they're champions. None of it feels like it matters. And even though some of the best teams in the world are on Raw, like, their tag team division is just a joke because they don't treat their champions like champions. They still treat Hawkins and Ryder like they got a fluke win at WrestleMania. And they kind of did, but now they're just still losing all the time, and they're treating them basically like they are the B team, and they're more talented than the B team. Like, I think they are better wrestlers than the B team, and I think there was a really great redemption story in them winning the titles in New York and breaking Curt Hawkins' losing streak and all that kind of stuff. There's so much potential to be done in the tag team divisions, and they are just spreading shit on their balls and rolling around in the ring. That's all they're doing. It's so bad, Kenny.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about the Revival don't want to re-sign. I'm like, I in this climate where it's like, you know, they don't want to re-sign, I just feel like doing this makes people just not either want to sign with you or want to stay with you. It's a very
weird
way.
They don't want to re-sign, right? Because if they re-sign, they could have 5 more years of this. And bless the Revival for committing. Like, they committed to the segment, because I did watch it. But
the SmackDown tag team division, though, my lord.
It's dire. It's absolutely dire. Like, when Shane McMahon said he was going to award the new tag team championships, did you see the graphic of the tag teams that were eligible?
Shane McMahon and
Elias Sampson were one of the tag teams. What even? Like, I thought he was going to award it to them. I thought he was going to award it to himself and Elias. And then he awards it to Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan, who, okay, fine. Like, that's fine as a tag team. Fine. Like, I didn't say great. I said fine. Who else is there? Heavy Machinery is an actual team. So that's something. And they did confront Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan backstage and make noises at them.
And make noises at them.
Well, how else would you describe what happened there?
No, you've described it with complete accuracy. So, noises were made.
I mean, the B team. What even are we doing? Because they broke up so many tag teams in the shakeup, right? Like, Sanity is no longer a thing because Alexander Wolfe is in NXT UK.
Do we really need two tag divisions, though? Like, I feel not really.
Well, it depends. If you have a brand split and you want two sets of tag team titles, then yes, you need two tag divisions. I think it is helpful to have two tag divisions on each brand. I think the champions should probably be combined and then float between brands. I think that would make a lot more sense for tag teams. I mean, if the women's tag team championships are combined, why aren't the men's tag team championships combined? But again, it's just the muddied waters of, do we even have a brand split anymore? And how long are we going to have a brand split anymore? Because it seems like if NBC and Fox really want this to be a combined program and they want all the storylines to go across both programs, then WWE is going to have to bow to the pressure of the networks, right? And that's one of the things about running WWE that's so complicated, is that they're not just a wrestling company who can do what they want. It's not all their fault that everything's so shitty. It's a lot their fault that everything's so shitty, but they also have so many outside pressures and outside like sponsors and people to please, that it just becomes a whole lot of masters and it is confusing. So yeah, I mean, the tag team division is dire, is basically the point of my story.
That is the message to send. Oliver Drake asks, how big is AEW partnering with ITV for Double or Nothing? Assume it could lead to an ITV weekly show. It's huge. I mean, ITV is essentially NBC in the UK. And I mean, like, NBC, it's weird because it's very hard to compare it to American networks, but like, I mean, ITV box office, even though it's not the broadcast channel that everybody gets in every TV set in every part of the country, ITV box office, you can get on your PS4, you can get it on your Xbox, you can get it on apps and stuff like that. So it's very easy to get. And $14.95, like, I saw something, you know, the network's only a tenner. It's like, yeah, but I think a lot of people really like convenience. Mm-hmm. And like, they like the idea of, like, it's a Saturday night as well. Let's remember that. It's on at 1 a.m. on a Saturday night. You can get your pals round. You can just watch it. You don't need to be worried about work the next day. Like, so it's very impressive. And, you know, ITV being something that AEW are going to partner with is a scary thing for WWE.
Well, and also $14.95 is not much for a pay-per-view. Like, what does that translate to? Like, $25 or something?
Well, yeah, Fighter charging $40, which I think is about £27.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's
see, I think you guys forget, because pay-per-views over there, like, you had them on Sky for so long. I mean, pay-per-views here before the network were, like, what, $60?
Well, before the network, it eventually happened that our pay-per-views were or was it the big four were like $14.95 and then the rest were free. But there was some of them that were $14.95, so it shouldn't be a new idea to somebody. Let's do a couple more questions to finish off. Harper Milo says, I guess more for Kenny, but could AEW ever become your favourite promotion over WWE despite your love and memories towards that brand? It could become my favourite current promotion. Like, WWE is always going to be like my childhood, and that's never going to change. I can't take that away, but I'm confident that if AEW becomes a big success, that will push WWE to get better. So I think ultimately I'm going to get to enjoy two shows in the long run, which would be great. I'd happily enjoy two over and not enjoying any, which is where I currently am. But you know, I think the thing for AEW that's important is that they are trying to appeal to a fan like me. They know there's a space in the market for a big budget, big production, pyro, stars, variety show type product. And there is. But a lot of people want to see that. People who used to watch WCW that don't watch anymore. People who used to watch WWE who don't watch anymore want it. Like, there is a... That's what I think is so exciting about it, because there are a lot of people who are not... You know, they're not moved by New Japan or Ring of Honor. They're not moved by their local indie who they go to in their town. They want a big budget, international, blah, blah, blah. And I think AEW have got a chance of providing that and doing what WWE should be doing but aren't doing very well right now.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
No, it does. And I think they are trying to appeal to... I mean, what I think they're doing very well is they are trying to appeal to fans like you who want box office and want stars and want names. Like, they have Jericho and they have, you know, Cody versus Dustin is a match full of names, right? And the production values are going to be great, and they're getting themselves on, you know, ITV is huge. And they're also kind of appealing to fans like me, because I'm like, oh, you signed Sunny Kiss. Oh, you signed Kylie Rae. Oh, you signed MJF. I can't wait to see these people become stars, because I think they have so many people on their roster who aren't nationally known right now, but absolutely could be, because they have the talent and they have, I mean, if the company is behind them and wanting to push them, then I think they, you know, sky's the limit. It feels a lot more like sky's the limit with AEW stuff right now than it does with WWE, because of just all of the stuff that we keep discussing about WWE. And I know that AEW, like, I'm not naive to the fact that AEW is also going to have to please sponsors and please networks and be subject to a lot of the same things that WWE is once they get more of a weekly television product and not just these big super shows. But I don't know, it feels like a different company, and I think it's good that they're offering variety, and I'm very intrigued to see where it goes.
Let's do two more to finish this off. So Andrew wanted to know, Andrew K. Saundra, how much fun was podcasting with Finlay Martin? You got him to release his inner Saundra for a few weeks.
Podcasting with Finn is great. Like, it's really, really great. I think the first couple times that Finn podcasted with me when Kenny was on as well, he was just kind of like, who is this woman and what is she? Like, he's just baffled by the type of fan that I am, because it's just so outside of his wheelhouse. And so, like, he's very much like the journalist who's covered this for a very long time. And I'm a lot more of the emotional fan who gets invested in storylines and crazy details. And I like the really shitty things because they make me laugh. But I don't know, like, I think the dynamic between the two of us being so different works really well. And there were definitely some times where I could catch him, and because I know I've done this to you too, Kenny, where, like, I would catch him think, like, oh, this is a shitty little detail that Saundra loved and I kind of almost enjoyed despite myself, because, you know, I can see that this is actually for people sometimes. Yeah, podcasting with Finn was a blast. I love it.
And let's do one more. I mean, everybody wanted to hear us talk about the Funhouse.
The Funhouse is great. We didn't mention the picnic at the end, though, with the kids with their, like, dead eyes just staring forward. Like, the Funhouse is getting creepier and creepier. Because, I'm so here for it. And, like, you know, him saying, you know, you ate Rambling Rabbit. Like, that's not cool, but we have to forgive. And then, like, you know, him having fireflies actually in you know, actual children and saying, you know, I can light the way. All you need to do is let me in. He's obviously not a good dude to let into your heart and soul. I mean, like, the Flash with the hurt and heal gloves again. And I don't know, just all of the callbacks. People were, what was Waylon Mercy's catchphrase that Mercy the Buzzard said?
I think that's what it was. I can't remember it, but yeah, he did the catchphrase of Waylon Mercy, which was, like, great, because, like, everybody said he was Waylon Mercy at the beginning, so he's playing up to it. So it's really good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, he's named Mercy the Buzzard, so it's not like, you know, yeah. I mean, Waylon Mercy, Bray Wyatt has said, was a big inspiration for Bray Wyatt as a character. I don't know. I think the whole thing is brilliant. I love it. I'm really sad about Rambling Rabbit, though. I kind of want, like, Ghost Rambling Rabbit to come back.
Daniel Fletcher wants to know, what would be your ideal, well, he says, what would your ideal card be for SummerSlam? But why don't we change it to, name me a match that you'd like to see at this year's SummerSlam. I'll give you one. I'd like to see Becky Lynch versus Asuka for the women's title.
Yeah, that would be great. Oh gosh. Right now it just seems like nothing matters. So I'm trying to think if there's anyone I would really want to see wrestle each other.
Vince McMahon versus Relevance?
I mean, I think we know who'd been there. I genuinely am stuck. Like, I can't even really think of anything. Like, who are the champions right now? Kofi versus...
See, this is another thing that's weird is, like the thing that's, you know, so Kofi being the champion, like, Kofi's not really a main event guy, which is part of the problem. Like, David made a point over to you, and it's not the worst point in the world, but the WWE title is kind of the IC title in some ways. Like, the old IC title. You know, because, like, back in the day, Bret Hart had the IC title, and then, like, you know, Hogan would have the world title. So if Lesnar had the Universal, you could see Kofi or Bryan having the IC. Like, it feels like they're... So it's an interesting time to see them kind of trying out something like Kofi as champion when really they're wanting ratings all the time. Like, that's their thing. Mm-hmm. They're like, we want a rating right now. And if they don't get it, who do they blame? Do they blame... you know, because Kofi's not somebody I think you can trust to draw a rating. Because that's not really, he's not there yet. He's still, it's going to take him time.
Well, I think Kofi's starting to feel more main event. Like, I think he's getting to feel more main event. And I think that he, like, having so much goodwill with the fans has been helping quite a bit. Daniel Bryan feels main event to me. And Daniel Bryan was the WWE champion. So I don't know if I would say it's completely the IC title right now. I mean, I guess if you compared, like, Kofi Kingston being champion to Brock Lesnar being champion, yeah, like, one of those has more of a name or whatever, but Seth Rollins and Daniel Bryan, I would say, are pretty much even keel.
But even, yeah, but even like AJ Styles, he didn't really feel like the main guy. Bryan felt like the main guy.
Bryan felt like the main guy, for sure.
But,
so, yeah, I mean, as far as, like, SummerSlam, though, it just... I don't even know what feuds are happening right now. Like, I am hard pressed to tell you even what the card is for Money in the Bank, and that's in a few weeks. So, and with all of the brand craziness and all that kind of stuff, I can't really think of any matches that really would light my fire because there's just not a lot going on.
That's a great ending to the show.
Sorry.
Stephen Bradley did tell us that Raw is going to be live in Glasgow on the 11th of November, which is cool. So Raw's being taped in Glasgow again. It should be fun. Let's finish with the Shag Marry Kill. Okay, so Sandra, Shag Marry Kill for you. Let's go with Vince McMahon, Tony Khan, and Dixie Carter.
Okay. I don't really know anything about Tony Khan, so it's hard for me to do this one, but I think I would probably marry Tony Khan just because I know that he's a wrestling fan and he does have lots of money, and why not? So I would definitely shag Dixie Carter because she's kind of hot, right? Like, yeah.
Okay.
Well, she's not going to be hot to you, but I think she's pretty. And I think that she would probably be a lot of fun. And I would kill Vince McMahon because I think it would be a kindness.
Okay. Plugs, Sandra. What plugs are you going to
do? I love that we're ending on that. Okay. You can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. We do have tons of bonus content that's actually going to start going up there again. That sentence doesn't make sense, but whatever, we're going with it. There's new Over to You with Kenny and David. There's going to be a $50 podcast that we need to catch up on. We are going to record the Chikara podcast soon in the next couple weeks. All sorts of stuff going up on Patreon. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content. Some really fun stuff up there from WrestleMania week and more. And InsideTheRopes.co.uk for tickets to live events, including an evening with Booker T.
There you go. That is it. So I want to thank everybody for listening. We're back to regular scheduled podcasting, so thanks for your patience and sticking with us. So who should play us out, Sandra? Whether it be just a pop song or a wrestling song, what should play us out? Make people happy on the way out.
Make people happy on the way out. I think we should play Cover Girl by RuPaul.
If you're walking,
because
you
I get it in
this.
My head so easily every time she does her like runway thing, which I kind of hate. I'm like, why are you doing a runway to come into your own show? But it's also really, really catchy.
And also one of the best parts of the week is to judge RuPaul's outfit and whether you like it or not.
100%.
So put some bass in your walk. And just if you're walking while you listen to this, we're going to play this. Strut, you deserve it. You got it. Work mm-hmm. it. You better work.
You better work.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.